Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why UnitedHealthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Hello and welcome to this. It is the Egg Chasers Rugby Podcast, the podcast about rugby that didn't take itself or the game too seriously. I am here with Phil. Hello, Philip.
Hello, Jonathan.
On this, the wonderful MWDP. Now, in case you don't know what MWDP means, it means Midweek Domestic Podcast, Tim's favourite podcast of the week. And as I say that, hello, Tim. How are you?
Very well. Still down the line, unfortunately, in a remote location, the Egg Chasers TMO shipping container is still in rural Kent.
Oh, I thought you were hanging out with Justin Trudeau. That's why we couldn't know where you were.
Yeah, I'm on the convoy. The TMO shipping container is on the back of a truck.
Wow, look at that. Doing your bit for freedom. Well done, Tim. Wonderful news. This is the MWDP, which deals with all things domestic rugby. But unfortunately, we're going to have to start with a very, very sad bit of news. So I think I'll hand this over to you, Tim.
Yeah, I think we would just want to take a moment to say that everyone connected with Evesham Rugby Club and with one of its players, Jack Jeffrey, and his family, friends and loved ones, just sending thoughts. It's absolutely tragic situation where in the act of scoring a try, he suffered an injury which took his life. And just a horrific thing to happen. Yeah. On a rugby field, and just really, really tragic news. So I think it has been, which will be heartwarming for the family at least and bring them some solace, it has been widely spread around the rugby community, which does what it does best at times like this. And we definitely echo those sentiments.
Yeah, it's just horrendous. I mean, there are risks, aren't there, with all sorts of contact sports, and it rarely happens. But when it does happen, it doesn't get any easier. So, yeah, really, really upsetting stuff. And, thoughts with all those affected.
Absolutely.
Right, let's get on with this. Let's start with this one.
No. I'm telling you, there's only one place this has to start. Ealing lost to Bedford in the championship.
Now, do you know what, Tim? I am so wrong and you're so right, because I was going to start with who's watching the Super Bowl. But we don't need to know about the Super Bowl, because that is a minor event compared to Ealing losing. So yes, let's definitely go with that. Definitely go with that. Yes, he didn't they? And it wasn't a small loss. It looks like they got an absolute beatdown.
At home to Bedford as well. 19-31, Bedford won.
Now,
which has just even more so opened up the championship.
Hasn't it?
Where there are just a few points. I mean, Ealing have still got a couple of games in hand on
Jersey. Jersey are in second.
Yes.
So at the moment, Doncaster top the table, 59 points, played 16, won 13.
Doncaster top the table.
Doncaster currently top the table. Jersey Reds are in second place, played 16, 58 points. Then Ealing Trailfinders have played 14, so they've got two games in hand. Oof. They're on 56 points. So it's still within Ealing's hands. They win those two games, they're 4 or 5 points clear.
So they've got to beat Doncaster and Jersey in the future.
Well, what are the fixtures? So,
I've heard a rumour, it's not all sweetness and light over Ealing.
Well, aren't Cornish Pirates only a point or two behind them? With the same number of games.
Cornish Pirates are 1 point behind Ealing. And you're right, Tim, they have played the same number of games. So Cornish Pirates are right up there as well.
Oh, my God. Now, if Ealing don't go up, they're going to be left with a bloody marquee full of weights, which is what they're doing. It's going to be a disaster.
Well, Ealing, next weekend, they travel to Jersey.
Yeah, that's a huge game.
The weekend after that, they host Doncaster.
Yes!
So that's massive.
What a couple of weeks that is!
The next two weekends, the 19th and the 26th of February, those are title-deciding weekends.
Yeah, Jersey Reds could be kingmakers because they have Ealing at home, then they go to Cornish Pirates.
You say I'm going to throw it against Cornish Pirates? It's a bit weird.
And the final game of the season, well, the 26th of March, Ealing host Cornish Pirates. So
yeah,
they've got
that's
to
the one.
They've got to play all the three
date.
Teams around them.
Oh my word!
Oh, sorry, that's not the final game. It's the second, the penultimate round of the weekend.
Yeah, so you need to find team. That is one where we need, like, hopefully they'll be playing Ealing versus Cornish Pirates in a bar in Portugal somewhere.
Oh my word, that's incredible stuff. Incredible.
Unbelievable game, that.
Well, actually, it is the week after Portugal, sadly.
Oh, it's the week after. We need to go to that. We need to go to Ealing Pirates. If it's still on the line,
I'd go to Pirates. I'm not saying I'm not going to Ealing, but I'd prefer a weekend at Pirates.
Ealing's easier to get to.
Yeah, but Pirates is more fun than we can sailing.
True. Very true.
So, yeah, you know.
That is very true.
Swings and roundabouts.
How about this? Sunday the 12th of March, Doncaster v Pirates is another option.
Doncaster's not far away from here, actually.
Couple of hours.
That's a hell. There is some massive game. I cannot believe nobody wants to broadcast this.
Well, just on Ealing. So I'm not talking about the squad. Well, I am a little bit. Who cares? But have you noticed the compilation of their squad? I mean, in my mind, they seem to have gone away a little bit from what they were trying to achieve. So you're looking at a lot of Irish retreads and a few South Africans, then mixing in some academy lads and whatnot. But they're certainly not what they purported to be early doors, which was, you know, we're going to have this academy, we're going to bring lads through, we're going to combine it with Brunel University, yada, yada, yada. When rubber meets the road, they seem to have gone back to, you know, well, certainly what the coach knows, and that's Irish players.
The to build an academy is a long-term process.
It
absolutely
is, yeah.
You can't just turn it around in a short space of time. And lots of clubs have had successful stints, certainly with bringing in lots of South Africans.
And Irish, to be fair. I mean, there's a hell of a lot of talent in Ireland who can't all play.
Yeah.
You know, if you've got that contact book and address book, more power to you if you want to go and pay the money. But I'm just saying, I'm not sure that many of the other teams who they're competing against are that full of imports. I'm just saying.
Yeah.
I'm just saying.
No, it's an interesting point. One other thing I will just throw into the mix here, because I don't totally know all the information on this, but I wouldn't put it past the RFU to have some influence here on who goes up through their... I'm trying to think of the right word. Their, I would say, unnecessary pernickety rules about grounds and stuff.
It's got to be a 10.
Oh yeah,
it's got to be a 10,000 seater stadium, hasn't it?
You have to have had all the agreements and everything in place before a certain point to qualify. Well, I mean, bearing in mind some clubs have, you know, if they weren't giving tickets away, they would have a few thousand people.
Mm. Well, you know that Wasps have stopped doing that now because they think it devalues their brand.
It's a tough trade-off
with
Wasps because having, I don't know, say 6,000 people in a 30,000-seater stadium also devalues the brand.
Yeah, unfortunately, that is the quandary. But my point being is I think Doncaster have got something. If they get top spot, they have the ground thing organised already.
So they'd go and
Ealing
use it.
As well, I think, have a stadium somewhere in West London.
Yeah, they organized. Will do. They'll be ready to go. These guys are.
Yeah.
I'm not saying they're banking on it. It'll carry on going regardless, but they really want to get up, and they've made provisions to do so.
But I bet you if Cornish Pirates do finish top, they won't be allowed, which will be a travesty.
No, because Cornish Pirates have got their own new stadium.
No, they haven't been built. I wouldn't put it past us getting really, really excited, building to this incredible crescendo and having a massive anticlimactic.
Well, do you know what I've heard? And again, I'm just telling you tales at school here. I have no way to back this up. This is not a credible news source at all. But I've heard that the RFU are saying to people, hey, you need to get involved now with Championship Rugby. and investor money, because we've got people in, waiting in the wings, international consortiums, who are just desperate to buy a Premiership club off you. Which is a strange thing to say, because anyone could put two and two together and think, well, if they're that bright, if these businessmen are so bright, surely they would just go and buy the Championship club now, no? Mm. Rather than wait for it to get promoted, and then they're so desperate to... I mean, I'm sure there's lots of Premiership owners that would quite like to know who these international consortiums are. But yeah, that's the word from the RFU, trying to get money into the Championship. I get it, it's their job, but I'm not sure if it's the strongest sales pitch to a budding rugby investor.
I don't know if the RFU do regard their job as getting money into the Championship, actually. Their actions would suggest otherwise.
I don't think they've got as much money as maybe people think. So
no, but my only point, you've got a wonderful product and an incredible story is building, and some games to go and check out if one of those clubs is anywhere local to you. But there was plenty of... what other local rugby do you want to talk about, Jay? Come on.
Well, Preston were victorious over Blackburn, a game I did not go and see, but I really wanted to. That league going into National 2...
North.
Yes, North Premier National 2 is heating up nicely. You've got Otley, you've got Preston, you've got Blackburn... and they are all they all look like they're playing some pretty aggressive rugby. Unfortunately, Albion lost, which is devastating. They went down. I think they went down to Billingham this weekend, which just not good enough. They sort of hover about fourth from bottom now. And again, you know, I think that they'll get somewhere. The top of that league's looking fairly interesting too. Broughton Park, Raffy Quirks, Broughton Park. Beat Bowden. I've never liked Bowden. Never liked Bowden.
Lovely, right. Too posh, Bowden.
JB, do you know a story? So I was at, on Friday night, I took Louis to like this Sail Sharks development coaching thing, whatever.
Yeah.
And I was chatting to some other people, and there were some guys from Bowden and Liam and stuff. And I was just having a chat with some of the other dads. And Broughton Park and Lim junior sections will not play each other, because I was chatting, going, "Oh, we should get our under 14s. We should play a game. Lim, Broughton Park, why don't we play?" They won't let them. Lim will not arrange a fixture with Broughton Park.
Why?
Because at first team level there is such animosity from some, which goes back years and has come from some pretty unsavory incidents.
No, apparently. Is that right? I never knew that.
Apparently so. I don't know what. I just wondered if you knew what it was. Clearly,
no, I remember. I don't remember playing Lim. I've never played Lim at first team level. I played him at second team level loads of times. First team level, they got out of the league that Broughton Park are currently in about, I'd say, 12 years ago now, and they've never looked back. And they're, you know, they're a very, very good outfit. I know any real history between the two.
I guess that's another question. And just I'll chuck it out there. Any beef between local teams? Any long-standing beef? I'd love to hear about it, and I'll try and find out what the beef is with Lim and Broughton Park. But
Broughton Park, Ultram Kursal, in my time there, did not like each other. Ultram Kursal, Bowden do not like each other. I actually very much like the people in Bowden. For some reason, that club just rubs me up the wrong way. I don't know what it is. They're actually very, very nice. Every time I've been there, they've been lovely. But it's just the club in general. I don't think Manchester have much in the way of rivalries, because, of course, they were playing such a high level that I think their rivalries have sort of been left behind.
Stockport mainly, maybe now.
Maybe Stockport, yeah.
Yeah.
Manchester, it's on their
Stockport
patch.
What's Edge?
Just whichever Northwest club is in the same league. So historically, it was always
Macclesfield, I guess. Would it?
Macfield, bit of Preston,
Sale.
Maybe.
Sale, well, FC.
Never in the same league.
No,
they obviously have been for the last, I don't know, 3-4 years, and Sale are above Sedgley now. But when I was playing,
Sale were nobody.
Sale were nowhere near.
Yeah, right.
Yeah, Sale were literally, when I was playing at Broughton Park, I think Sale were what, two leagues below.
Well, we played for Broughton Park Vets a couple of years ago,
yeah,
against Sale, and put like 80 points on them, because the team that they had 10 years ago
were actual vets, not incredible specimens like us.
No, they were vets. Yeah.
been murdering cows all afternoon, exhausted.
Unfortunately, the Huddersfield game was postponed at Starbridge, which is annoying. Have you seen...
Sedgley had a good win.
Yes, he did.
Against Bladen.
In fact, they are... I think they've got two games in hand, haven't they? They're not looking like they're going to win
it. They?
Yeah, they have. Sedgley on 18 games, Hull are on 20, although Rotherham are also on 18 with 77 points. So Rotherham... no, Hull are definitely in the driving seat there.
Jonathan Peepers has emailed contacttechchasers@gmail.com, and on the question from last week, we were asking about rugby players with names you don't see or hear much of anymore, and he pointed out there is the Blitzbocker player Cecil Africa.
Yes, you don't hear many Africans, do you?
Quite right. And he also just Jonathan got in touch on email, and he said he is a hooker slash loosehead, 29 years of age, a Swiss knife front row, as JB likes them.
Love them.
And he's reaching out from Celtic Rugby Club in Brussels.
Oh, yeah, I read this. It's awesome.
Yeah, it's brilliant. So he was just letting us know a little bit about Belgian rugby. There are two expat clubs in Brussels, one British and one Celtic. The men's first 15 play in the Belgian third division and have recently welcomed former Munster and Grenoble hooker Duncan Casey into the ranks because he's moved to Brussels for work.
Awesome.
Hang on. You basically go to a brand new town, city, it's an alright city, Brussels. I've not heard great things about Brussels. Regardless, you then decide that the best way to arrange your sport, your sport, is a copy of Celtic Rangers. is that what I'm understanding?
Something like that.
It sounds like it.
Brilliant.
Anyway, he just wanted to report because we were asking what had happened to Belgium's national 15. We were pondering its fate on the pod recently. Mm-hmm. He said, sadly, our national team has been relegated from the so-called Six Nations B or Rugby Europe Championship in May 2021, having lost the promotion relegation playoff against the Netherlands. He said the playoff was a tactical farce. A historically larger forward-dominated team, as Belgium were, chose to play on a fast artificial pitch in Waterloo instead of our traditional home, the small Heysel, as it's known, a small ruddy, muddy ground, which was the site of the famous win against Spain that led to the Spanish team revolting at the Romanian referee.
Yeah, I remember it well, and it was a particularly muddy pitch from memory.
The small Heysel. Does Heysel mean something? Is Heysel a place?
It's a ground.
Heysel Stadium.
Yeah, I know Heysel is a stadium.
It's a football ground.
Yeah, but does it actually mean something, or is it a place?
I imagine it's a place.
Mm. Yeah.
Anyway, he said, I'd be happy to keep you updated on updates from Grassroots International Rugby in Europe as your Belgian correspondent. Jonathan Peepers of Brussels, you are officially our Belgian correspondent.
Incorrect. He's our Belgique correspondent, but please continue.
Quite right. He said that Belgium got a walkover win this week. 28-0 winners over Ukraine, who were unable to field the team due to COVID.
COVID's the reason?
Yeah.
What?
There might be something else about to go down in Ukraine where they might want all able-bodied athletic men.
Rugby players might be a real asset to the people of Ukraine at the moment, so yeah.
Belgium have a new national ground in Brussels. It's named after a world leader of the past. Care to guess?
A world leader? I could not name a single Belgian.
No, Premier.
Premier.
Who said it
King
was Belgium?
Leopold?
King Leopold.
That'd be one.
Who said it was a Belgian? Who said it was a Belgian?
Okay.
So, if a world leader. Is it the Macron Stadium?
Did you say former? Yes. George W. Bush Stadium.
That's not a terrible shout, is it? Because
he played a bit of rugby.
Played
didn't
rugby, but Brussels is the home of NATO, isn't it?
Hmm.
So, what world leaders do you think would represent the aspirations for peace that NATO would arguably have?
I feel this is a trick question. Is it ex Nigerian Premier Good Luck Jonathan?
Incorrect.
It's got to be. It has to be representing peace and also rugby.
Nelson Mandela
has to be Mandela.
It is the Nelson Mandela Stadium.
There we go.
Oh, I wasn't too far off with Good Luck Jonathan.
I know, I was close with George W. Bush.
Yeah. Excellent. So 19 also, minutes gone.
Yeah, no, it's fine. And he also says that the Six Nations is being broadcast on terrestrial television for the first time ever in Belgium.
Oh, excellent.
Awesome. That excellent. Is good.
Which is great. Anyway, yeah. Jonathan, you're our Belgian correspondent. Other correspondents for other nations, get in touch. Contact tedchasers@gmail.com. Yeah, and you were just about to say, we're 19 minutes into a podcast. We haven't mentioned...
any professional rugby yet.
Sorry.
That's okay. Well, it just shows how much better domestic rugby is, club rugby is, compared to girl international rugby. So I got all of my results right this week.
Except?
Gloucester.
Ooh.
Bloody Gloucester, eh?
I thought Gloucester were going to do it, especially after Exeter kind of fell apart last week. Was it last week against Wasps, where Wasps came from behind?
I mean,
I thought Gloucester would have enough to do it, actually.
I did as well. I don't think Exeter can scrimmage particularly well at the moment. Young second rows, David Jenkins is playing again, who must be some player. I mean, 113 kilograms, 19 years old.
Yeah.
You know, he's obviously going to be quite something. But he's still 19 years old, and it's still the second row. Hell of a win, this, for Exeter, because, I mean, I suspect down at Sandy Park they might already be at battle stations. This isn't quite good enough for them, is it? They currently are in, what, fifth or sixth?
They were in seventh. Let me just check the current table. It is...
sixth. They're in sixth, aren't they? They're behind Wasps, I'm sure.
They are in sixth place. Yeah, 1 point behind Wasps, 2 points behind Quins. So they.
Can you just highlight the? Can you highlight the points from third down to ninth while you've got the table there, Phil?
Yeah. So Gloucester in third on 47, 4 points back is Quins, in fourth on 43. Then it's 1 point to Wasps on 42, 1 point to Exeter on 41, 1 point to Northampton on 40, who are level with London Irish. And then 1 point to Sale. And then it's 12 points
to
Bristol.
So just to highlight the point, Sale are only how many points to third?
Well, if Sale...
to top four. How many points to fourth? It's only... is it
four points? 4 points. So Sale, a win, a bonus point win, would, and every other game going their way, which is possible, would take them into fourth place from ninth.
Oh, incredible stuff.
But then Bristol, 27, are 12 points adrift. Then 3 points to Falcons on 24, 3 points to Worcester on 21, and a full 7 points behind Worcester are Bath on 14.
Just on the Exeter situation, I'm curious about this, because I'll reveal and talk about what Ali Heifer said in the aftermath of the game, the head coach at Exeter. But I'll ask you guys first, because I'm sure you've been in situations in teams in the past where you've been on losing runs. What did it feel like, and what did you do or not do that turned it around or brought you out of it? Do you remember? Do you have any memories of that?
Well, actually, funny enough, a Facebook post of mine came up from 10 years ago, and what I said 10 years ago, and it's something like, game cancelled today, check. Drove 2 hours to get a different game in Wales, check. Lost game, check. Lost my boots before kickoff, check. Have not won a game of rugby since the... it's like some stupid date. So I went through a phase of not winning for 4 months.
So what did you do to rectify that?
Personally, I find when you're in a losing team, you forget how hard winning is, particularly when the league is really competitive. Winning is often based around really dull, boring stuff like... hitting rucks and working hard, particularly at first team level. So yeah, it's so dull. It's so dull. But I think you've got to reinstall the importance of your work rate.
Now, interestingly, we were talking last weekend about Tok H, the mighty Tok H, after they lost to Widnes, and there was some chat I think on your coach's WhatsApp group about changing strategy, changing game plan.
Yeah.
And we were talking about, is that the right thing to do? I.e., stick with the systems that you've worked. And to use a Pat Lam phrase, although Pat Lam himself might not be the best man to speak to in this regard, but trust the process, trust the systems. Just because you lose a few games or many games doesn't mean you should throw the baby out with the bathwater.
Yeah. I think actually that's a really good point, because at the very sharp end of rugby, and I mean club rugby, not international rugby, but sharp end of club rugby, there probably is an answer to who has the best system. And I think that system will change year in, year out, depending on, you know, coaches figuring stuff out. As you get lower down, do you get really high level sort of amateur rugby, level 6, level 5, whatever it is, you can win in pretty much any, you know, any of the following ways. Like Jersey win in a much different way to say how Doncaster win, and that's not amateur, but you know, I'm just giving you an example of Jersey, who were renowned for throwing the ball around for a little bit, or Cambridge, who are renowned for mauling the league below that. You can win any which way, as long as you put the effort in to be really good, you know, at that system. And all you're worried about is, can you increase your average wins every single year? That's it. And you can do that with literally anything if you're good enough at it.
But there is also in that where you're looking at the, well, do you have a mauling team? Do you have a forwards based team? Do you have a throw the ball wide team? Because you can't spend all the time doing everything.
No.
You've got to pick your poison. There is, by definition, from that type of problem, a rock, paper, scissors scenario, that some teams will come up better against other styles and worse against other styles, if that makes sense.
Yeah. Although, correct. I do think there's some universals. So I think the one thing you can't compromise on is breakdown, because there is always going to be a breakdown.
You can't compromise on line-out.
Line-out is no
compromise. There's always going to be line-outs. There's always going to be scrums. There's always going to be...
No, but breakdown, like, you can compromise on scrums, actually. So, like, look at South Africa versus England. I'm pretty sure Eddie Jones said, there is no point in coming second to South Africa. We're coming second. So let's play Bevan Rodd because he's amazing around the park. You know, you can actually miss things out.
Look at the World Cup final where England had a compromised scrum and that was the game.
Yeah.
That England never got close to winning that game because every time they tried to play, the pressure went on because they knew if they knocked the ball on, it was a scrum, yeah. And a scrum meant the penalty
actually,
to South Africa.
You can even compromise on line-out. So I don't compromise on line-out because I think it's a really good way to instill a winning attitude, because you generally speaking, be really good on your own line-out ball. But some teams just discard it completely. Say, we're going to run a 5-man and we're just going to use the line-out as a way to get the ball back in play. Same with the scrum, we're just going to use the scrum to get the ball back in play. So to jump back to Exeter. Yes.
Oh, sorry.
Go on.
I was going to say, to jump back to Exeter, I can remember being on a losing run with a team, and I remember it got more and more tense as you went on, and people started to get more and more cheesed off with other people, and there was the odd little rotten apple that would start bitching about, I don't think we should be doing this setup for lineups or whatever,
yeah.
Blah, blah, blah. And you hear those conversations go more and more. And what I really liked about what Ali Heifer said in the aftermath of beating Gloucester is he said, do you know what? I'm really pleased the boys went out and put in the kind of performance that reflects the week of training we had. And this week in training, one of our main focuses has been just getting the fun back.
Mm. Mm.
So they've just, the coaches have, I just think that's, again, correlation, causation. It might not have been the reason why they beat Gloucester. But if it's pretty telling that Exeter are a very experienced bunch of coaches who've been to the summit, because they've clearly gone after a tough old time and some results that haven't gone their way with a young and inexperienced pack, as you've already identified. And they've just gone, do you know what? We don't, kind of what Phil was saying, trust the system. And actually, do you know what we need? We need, whether it's a few beers together or we need to just have a bit of a laughing training, we need to have a bit of fun. And that, and the consequence of doing that is exactly what you said, JB, which is you'll go out and work that bit harder for the man next to you.
Well, just to sort of elaborate on the extra point, that is a team that have fun. That is in their DNA. Exeter players love being Exeter players because it is really good fun down at Sandy Park. I'm not sure there is a club in the country where the players have more fun.
Maybe Saracens.
Maybe Saracens, but I don't know. I mean, look, if you mess up in London and you do something bad, it's going to get reported. Because, you know, so what? You're a player. If you do something naughty, a little bit naughty in Exeter, don't think the local press is reporting on that. You know, you pretty much run that place.
There is a flip side to that, in that in Exeter, you're a big fish.
Oh,
so
yeah,
actually,
yeah, yeah.
In London, you can go out and you're, the fact you're a rugby player, he's like, yeah, and?
No, yeah. a lot of people don't care.
Yeah, but if you're caught out though doing something naughty, like dwarf tossing, like the England.
Well, that was in South Africa, in New Zealand, yeah, wasn't it?
Now, if you're New Zealand dwarf tossing and certain press members get hold of it, yeah, they will publish it. I don't think the Bath Chron are going to be snitching on Maxidromo doing it. Not that he would, obviously. But if he did, he'd throw him in a range of styles.
But for this game. Exeter needed a win. Exeter actually got a bonus point win, and they prevented a team that are now a genuine top four rival, or well, they're more cemented in the top four than Exeter are. They prevented Gloucester from getting a single point out of this game, which is pretty big.
It's amazing.
In the context, especially when, if you think back to last week's MDP, and we were talking through the kind of a little bit, a medium bit and a big bit, the impact of internationals on these teams, and Gloucester are only affected a little bit, and Exeter are one of the most affected in the league these days.
I was driving home on Friday, right, as I'm apt to do, and I was thinking about the league and how it's all going to pan out. I do think Saracens are looking ominous when they get everyone back, but the two teams I'm really intrigued by to win the thing are going to be Gloucester and Tigers.
Tigers, yeah.
I was actually at the stage last week, I'm thinking, yeah, I think Gloucester can do this. I think Gloucester can actually win the entire league. And then they do this, and I don't know. I don't know now.
I think they can. I think they'll get top four, but I think they'll sneak into top four in third or fourth, which means an away trip to, well, most likely Saracens or Leicester. And I just don't think they will get through that.
I think they'll get through Leicester. No, I don't think that. Do I think that? I think more Ooh. Chance of Leicester than Saracens, but they have beat Saracens at the Allianz.
Yeah, they can do it. It could be Gloucester's year, but maybe not this year.
So yeah, I'm looking at Tigers historically, thinking, yeah, they're not that good. Tigers are that good, and you just need to look at what they did this weekend to Northampton. I said, and it's got me into trouble. This I said that Tigers are not affected by international call-ups. And I had a conversation with a friend of mine. He said, what? Of course, of course, we're absolutely affected by international call-ups. Here are all the England guys that have gone. And he's right. I think seven lads have gone there.
Genge, Chesham, Stewart. George Ford. Yeah, Freddie Stewart.
Ford, Young, Stewart.
Youngs. Yeah, but Youngs makes the Leicester team better when he goes to England.
Yeah. The prop.
Genge.
The other prop.
Hayes.
Joe Hayes.
Yeah, so they do lose a lot, granted. But the reason I said it didn't affect them is because they're so good throughout the squad. You know, when you can put Montoya onto a field or someone like that, you're going to be still winning a good handful of games. And they battered Saints.
Yeah, they did. They beat them up front. And you had a 10, who is a 10, in Freddie Burns, playing with front football and wanting to play and looking brilliant. And you also had Furbank, who's not a 10, but he's good enough to fill in at 10, but he's not as good as a full-time 10, Freddie Burns, playing at 10.
Now, just on Freddie Burns, right? Ford is out the door.
Yeah.
He's gone. Freddie Burns is knocking about.
Yeah.
Let's all remember this. Freddie Burns was the last fly-half to take the Tigers to playoffs. The last one. And he very nearly beat Wasps. He was exceptional that day.
And he very nearly beat New Zealand with England.
Yeah. When he wants to play rugby, he's really good. Now, Leicester have gone out and signed Andre Pollard. I just wonder if Burns, over the next few weeks, can make this job his own, or at least give the... I hope he can give the Leicester hierarchy just something to ponder. Like, is he going to be the answer? So, Pollard's going to come over, and he's not the playmaker Ford is. So maybe Pollard does come in, moves out to 12, and if Burns can just continue to win games and play well and impress the higher-ups... Who knows how it pans out?
Got a little Jimmy at 12.
Oh, God, yeah.
Well, and Dan Kelly.
Dan Kelly's very good, yeah.
Dan Kelly's very, very good.
I quite like the fact that Burns is back, he's playing well, and let's not forget how good he was last time he was there.
Yes. I thought Billy Burns was... He was part of the... There's two main...
Freddie Burns.
I keep saying Billy Burns. Freddie Burns.
Heart wants what it wants, Phil.
I've got Billy Burns on the brain.
Yep.
I thought Freddie Burns was... There are two differences between the two teams. Freddie Burns and the physicality of the pack. They were the main two differences.
Yeah, something not right about Northampton. I mean, they're just so fickle.
It's a team... I was thinking about this when you watch Lewis Ludlam and Courtney Laws play internationally, there are a few players who will give more effort and put their body on the line more than those two players. What do the other Northampton players think when they look? Do they just think, "Oh, well, Lewis and Courtney are going to do it, so why do I bother?"
They seem to have a lot of players with good attitudes and try really hard who just aren't quite big or good enough. I think about Tamona Harrison all the time here. He's running around like a maniac, but people can get on top of him really, really easily. He's basically like a really aggressive scaffolder. Ludlam could be great in a bigger back row, but again, you know, he's not physical enough. Yeah, the way he runs, he's like all elbows and knees, but he's not, you know.
I think Ludlam would have made a difference to this team. Ludlam and Courtney make a big difference to this team also, this weekend.
The front row needs to do more. The front row needs to carry. I like the second rows they've got. The front rows need to be. They need Vincent Cock. They need Joe Marler.
Who doesn't need Vincent Cock?
Yeah. Those are the sort of players that they're missing. I actually think the back row is fine. The second row is fine. It's front rows that they need.
Want flexibility? Take yoga. Want flexibility with your health insurance? Check out United Healthcare Insurance Plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly medical, dental, and vision coverage that may be right for you. More at uh1.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Generic point about this weekend's fixtures with this game in mind. The East Midlands Derby and Saracens versus Quins, two of the showpiece moments in the season.
For the
Gallagher Premiership.
Yeah.
Two of the, particularly the East Midlands Derby, huge occasions for a whole region and for two of the most supported clubs. And both games have been during international windows. It is ridiculous.
Not good enough, is it?
This out.
It's crazy.
Why don't, at the start of every season, the clubs hand in two games or one game each that they really want to play with all their internationals, and they have to play that outside of the window? And if both clubs hand in the same one, I don't know, what do you do with that?
Home and away fixtures?
I just think the Premiership should make that call. They go.
I would not trust the people at the Premiership to make any calls.
The point is, you could say one of the East Midlands derbies, or one of every fixture, has to be outside of an international window. We have to have at least one.
Yeah, at least one. But the rivalry, if you've got a rivalry you want to play, and you want all of your boys available for it, you hand that little docket in at the start of the season. And that's it. The idea of Premiership Rugby doing it, can you imagine the mess that they'd make of this? It'd be horrendous. Premiership Rugby shouldn't do anything. Just let the clubs do it.
The clubs are Premiership Rugby.
The clubs are Premiership. No. The actual employees of Premiership Rugby, they should concentrate on like just totting up the points on the table. Like that should be it.
It pained me that I was watching Saracens versus Quins. And it will be an afterthought for a lot of rugby fans. And the East Midlands derbies have both happened when there's been big international weekends. It's just, we love this product. We love the Premiership. We podcast about it 8.5 years and counting, 52 weeks of the year every Monday. And how they cannot work this out is beyond me.
Yeah, you are right. You are right. This, Leicester, Northampton should not be without all their best players. Did you see the Leicester promo for this game?
I didn't actually watch it.
Loved it. It was good. Really, really good. It's such a shame, I'm so angry about this now.
Just to explain what you're talking about, if anyone doesn't know, because it's on Twitter, where only about 5% of people are.
Yeah.
We were praising the Tampa Bay Buccaneers and NFL in general about how they build up their sport and they tap into the history and they make emotional, motivational videos that just really cut to the quick and make your heart make you fall in love with rugby all over again. And Leicester Tigers, to their credit, did a brilliant one this week.
Yeah, it was all, it was brilliant. So there's two promo videos out this week, and one of them was brilliant, and the other one I thought was going to be brilliant, and it just was awful. So the other promo video, did you see the one Channel 4 put together for Rugby League?
No, but I've heard that it was obviously on Channel 4 this week, broadcasting live game, weren't they?
They are, yeah, yeah, which is brilliant, by the way.
I think they've got 10 games they're broadcasting. It was Warrington, Wigan on this
Yeah, one. I mean, the more people watching Rugby League, the more people will realise exactly what the Premiership are missing. And Rugby Union, actually, are not missing, but they've left behind. So I saw this promo, I was like, yes, it's going to be hard working class men beating each other up, can't wait. The music started, it was awesome, there's a bit of history about Rugby League, and it's like, why do we like Rugby League? Because it represents the diverse, changing nature of our community. It's like, no, it doesn't, here we go. And they're trying to sell the Super League. That is a very precise product, that is a thing, the Super League. Why do they love Rugby League? Because the disabled Rugby World Cup, the Women's Rugby World Cup and the Men's Rugby World Cup will all be held at the same time. Don't care. That is for the Rugby World Cup to sell, not for the Super League, you morons. Why do they like Rugby League? Because they had the first black captain of any British sports team some time ago. That just tells me that Rugby League wasn't racist then, it's not racist now. Why are we still talking about that? It's not a racist sport. Just move on. So
I had to listen to what you've just said for the last minute and guess what channel we're broadcasting it, I would only need one guess.
Yeah, Channel 4. Who wasn't going to watch Rugby League and now is going to watch Rugby League because the Disabled World Cup is played at the same time as the actual World Cup? These people are nuts and they should not be allowed anywhere near sports.
To be fair, I'd quite like to go and watch the Wheelchair World Cup.
I would as well.
It's a very different point, but it's actually a brilliant sport.
Yeah, I might even watch the Women's World Cup, but that's not for your Super League broad. It's not for your, they're advertising different things, completely different things. I want to see.
Yeah, that's like going your local butchers, come in and buy some meat. Why? Because because the trousers that the butcher is wearing
exactly
are a really lovely colour.
It's got nothing to do with why I'm there. So and by the way, did you see the red card for Catalan? Dylan something his name is.
Hartley.
Christ. Everything about there is like, it's like 2 minute phase of play. It starts with St Helens Catalan. I can't remember this guy's name, Dylan something. And he comes flying in, shoulder to head. It's a sort of thing which in rugby union,
lifetime ban,
right? The guy gets a red card, rightly so. But the whole thing is, so Rugby League, first of all, high shot, guy goes down. Obviously, they're all fighting, not just for this phase, but then the next phase it all kicks off as well. And then to cap it all off, there's a third fight, effectively, which is the concussed player who's just coming around fighting with the physio to stay on the field. Like, everything is so Rugby League, you think, yes, this is a sport. Let's get into it, boys.
But even they have caught up with Rugby Union a bit with the head contacts and stuff.
It is ridiculous, to be fair. It is ridiculous. But yeah, when they banned the shoulder charge, I think it was downhill from there.
Yeah. The shoulder charge was ridiculous.
Yeah.
It was so, so dangerous.
Rugby Union's problem is that it tries to emulate other sports, and it's not that. It always tries to copy football, the league table, the social views, the social campaigning, the whole lot. It's just a pale impersonation of what the Premier League does. And then sadly for Rugby League, they seem to be wanting to be a paler version of Rugby Union. And let me tell you, brothers, it doesn't work.
I don't think that's accurate. I think it's just they've seen the law cases mounting up and gone, yeah, we probably need to do something.
But if boxing can exist, Rugby League can exist. If UFC can exist, Rugby League can exist.
But there's very different, in terms of boxing, you have two fights a year, you have a mandatory, whatever it is.
Yeah, but you signed up for
12 week. Oh, yeah, but what I'm saying is, if you've got concussions in Rugby League, say concussions in Rugby Union, and you had a mandatory 3 month stand down period for every concussion.
Well, I'm not saying you don't have a mandatory stand down period, but people sign up for the laws that they sign up for, and it's a free world. If you want to go into a sport with no mandatory stand down, it's completely up to you. And if you've seen the fights in ice hockey or lacrosse, by the way. Have you come across the fights in lacrosse?
No.
Pretty insane. Yeah, look, sports need to understand this. They can make their own destiny, and it's up to them. Do not try and copy what other sports are doing, because you will fall flat.
Just on that, I can confirm my missus played lacrosse for England. It's
did
brutal.
She?
Yeah, it's brutal.
Was she based in Wilmslow somewhere?
No, this was when she was at university at Loughborough.
Oh, right, because Wilmslow was like a hotbed for lacrosse. I think most of the England team are based somewhere around Wilmslow. That could be old news, I don't know.
But it's brutal anyway, I can confirm. What game were we on? Can't remember.
We were talking about
East Midlands Derby.
Yeah, Tigers Northampton.
Yeah.
Other things to touch on in this, Nadolo scored a couple of nice tries. More importantly for Nadolo, did you see Hutchinson go round him on the outside? It was mm-hmm. Pernod-esque.
Was it?
Yeah, it was lovely.
That's a good comparison, actually. It was. He glided round him.
Yeah, just a little step and go. And before Nadolo kind of knows what's going on, Hutchinson, who is, we said it a few weeks ago, he's playing probably his best rugby for about 3 or 4 years. But it's not enough, him playing in this Northampton team, unfortunately for them.
Yep. I just googled this fight to see if I could find it. I couldn't, but it's just giving me lists and lists and lists of fights.
Of rugby league fights.
Yeah. Two red cards, Flowers sees red, Super League Grand Final, Morgan Knowles faces lengthy ban, Brawl at Salford as Mossop sees red. Leeds,
the Ben Flower one on Lance O'Hire.
That's actually not entertaining.
That's outrageous, that
one. It's like 7 seconds into it. It's right at the start of the grand final.
If you want to break Google, it's rugby league fights, because it's just never end. You'll never find the one you want. And,
Too many.
Do you think when Worcester played Sale Sharks at the weekend, do you think that there would have been animosity between Steve Diamond and Alex Anderson?
Yes.
Do you think it would have been niggle?
Yes, 100%. Two alpha males. One is very abrasive. By the way, I've got to be careful what I say here. I don't want to get myself in trouble with the Sharks in any way, shape or form. But
However,
I mean, Alex Sanderson is effectively a reformed psychopath from his playing days. There's no two ways about it. Like, that's why he was so good at rugby, because he was just hard as nails. And then you've got Steve Diamond. I don't need to tell you any more about him. Now, I do believe that underneath the psychology chart, still, Alex Anderson is probably still, there's still some of Alex Anderson from there 10 years ago. I can't imagine Alex Anderson backing down. In fact, I think the reason he can talk about all this flowery stuff with impunity is because it is backed up by an actual psychopath.
Mm.
There's just no two ways about it. Or at least a very, very tough man.
Yes, he's still a very tough man, even though he does like to, like you say, talk about the flowery and the fluffy stuff a little bit as well.
He's so intense. What is it? I'm meditating. okay. Yeah.
This is one game I've not really seen much of.
Well, I have seen the highlights, and
I saw one of Reed's tries with the little McGinty break and the chip through.
Yeah, so Aaron Reed had a good game. And I'm really, really excited now about both these wingers having a bit more time to play, play for whatever reason that they do. And, that game time, you can tell that, particularly Aaron Reed, I think he's getting very, very used to life in the Premiership now, which is great to see.
Rulebook, I saw his one try where he looked rapid.
Yeah.
I don't know if that was his first or second, but Rulebook last week was the boy scoring two tries against Quinns, and particularly his second, I think it was, where he stepped inside. Did he step inside Tyrone Green for that one?
Yes, he did.
It was lovely. So two really talented young wingers.
Here's something which you already know, but I want to re-emphasise it, because he was just so good. The try that Rafi Quirk set up. Quirk was
Rafter Quirk.
So good. I mean, I was just thinking about the things he can do now at age, what is he, 12 or something, right?
20?
The way,
something like that.
His acceleration, his step, and then the way he can just throw the ball out of, any direction from an offload. Did you see the one the other week where he sort of fell over but it went out the back door?
Yeah, that was against Quinns.
Yes, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Incredible. I think the one that he set up this week was even better. So he sort of dummies an offload and it goes kind of, you know, loops it over the top. It's quite something. He is quite something.
Oh, talk into the mic, end of the mic.
There we go. He is quite something.
You're getting so animated, JB.
Well, I've had the theory for a long time that Rafi is ready to take over from Pfaff.
And from Ben Youngs,
yeah. But if he takes over from Ben Youngs, you can't really take over from Pfaff. I mean, he's just an incredible talent. And that's what's coming through. Rob Dupree?
That is to any parents of young kids, especially good under 14 kids in the Greater Manchester area, that is what Broughton Park does for you.
Is that right?
Rafi Quirk, so come along.
Exactly. Yeah. Yeah, guaranteed, isn't it?
Yeah.
Guaranteed.
And also McIntyre.
Yes, Simon McIntyre as well.
Or Tokachi's Jonathan Beardmore.
Exactly, if you really want success.
Yes.
it was a very, very convincing win, to be fair. Hmm. Oh, I tell you what else I'll mention, though, is some of the touches from Finn Smith were magical. So I understand that he signed a 5-year deal a few months ago. And if that is true, that is some great work. He's going to be an England player. I have no doubt about that.
So he's England under 20s at the moment, I want to say?
He's Orlando Bailey's cohort.
Mm. Obviously he's not at the moment. He must have been previously England under 20s.
Yeah. Yeah, sorry, yes.
Because England under 20s lost on Friday night to Italy.
Yeah, he comes up with this lovely little delayed pass. But anyone watching Worcester at the moment will tell you that Finn Smith is legitimately a very good player. And if they can keep him, which I think they can because of the salary cap just sort of incentivises them, and he's got a 5-year
deal. And a 5-year deal. They'll keep him for a while.
Ollie Lawrence, Ted Hill, I think they're going to be... So, they're going to be a force if they can just carry on adding a few bits and pieces here and there.
Bring the right players through the academy. Add a few choice players, although ideally not two who are going to be playing for Scotland half the season.
Yeah.
Like Duan and Sutherland.
Yeah. As for Sale, a few weeks ago I was really down in the doldrums about them. I just didn't feel they were clicking, didn't feel that they had any attacking edge, and then out of nowhere Roebuck and Reid have started smashing in tries, which is good.
Yes.
And who a few weeks ago when you were down in the doldrums was saying they can make the playoffs?
Yeah, but did you really think they could make the playoffs using Roebuck and Reid? Did you think that was
I've spent the last few weeks going, when we go, where should we start? I go, well, let's start with the most significant game of the round, and I think it's Sale's win. Really? Really?
Yes. How do you think that they were going to come back into it? Because I don't think that you thought that it's going to be the two academy wingers. In a way, they've kind of fallen into this.
Oh, you can't put the win down to Roebuck and Reid. They've been playing well, but you can't sort of go, that was the moment when it all turned round for Sale.
Well, strange enough, I think there is something to that, because I think Sale really did lack an edge. And they've lacked a try-scoring edge for a little while now. So they were very good at bludgeoning teams to death. I mean, that's never really been a problem. AJ McGinty has stepped up his game, I think,
been a problem, though. That's exactly what you're saying. It has been a problem. They haven't been bludgeoning teams to death this season.
Well, yeah, but there's only so much bludgeoning that you can do. I mean, you've got to to do it every single week's hard.
Dan Dupree has not been getting them over the gain line in the way they did last year and in previous years.
It's
big,
hard.
Massive... Running at brick walls wasn't working. They have needed a bit more balance in their game.
Yeah, so they need two rapid wingers and their two and Sue Scamarva's back.
And Quirk and McGinty.
Look, a few weeks, I'm delighted that it's gone this way, because I was actually starting to think, like, God, have they massively overestimated how good this academy is? Are we going to see like this failed group of who we thought were going to be super superstars just not make it? But I'm a little bit more optimistic now.
As a neutral,
I'm just pleased, JB, because me and you both predicted Sale would win the title this year, and we've still got potential that we could actually predict correctly, because all my other predictions for the league have been dreadful.
Well, I feel Bristol are going to come into some form soon. To come second in the table.
Not so sure.
Yeah.
By the way, love the fact that Irish gave him an absolute hiding.
And it was a hiding.
Absolute hiding.
Now, it did help the Nolauga red card with 20 minutes to go.
Well, look, You pull up the London Irish team, right? And you look for, I'd say three names, maybe four, but the three names I look for, Simmons, Coleman, Paddy Jackson. Okay, they could win. And that's basically it. That's how I sort of assess.
Talk into the microphone.
That's how I am talking into the microphone. Yeah. Sorry.
No. You go up that end of the microphone. Go where the microphone.
Yeah.
There you go. That bit. There you go.
Yeah, and I think as long as they've got those three, they're in with a good shout because no one's going to have or unlikely to have as good a fly half, but not a better fly half. And I'm not sure there is a better pair of locks in the country, is there?
It's definitely not a more expensive pair of locks in the country. No, I can guarantee you that.
Yeah.
Yes. Although depends how much Marrow's image rights are this week.
Yeah, quite. But I mean, Marrow can be paired up with, I mean, all sorts. To be honest, like
Swinners, Callum Hunter-Hill, Theo McFarland.
Yeah. McFarland, I quite like McFarland.
I like McFarland. But it's not like two wallaby locks, is it? With the best, you know. I mean, maybe I'm trying to think of like another great lock pairing. Oh, Hill and
Gray. Johnny Gray
is excellent. That's probably the best lock pairing in the country, isn't
pretty
it?
Pretty nice. Although Lude Diaga and name your other South African.
Lude is excellent. The others are they're okay. Oh, Fafita Launchbury. There's a
feet and look.
That's a great
that
little
is
pairing,
nice, actually. Yeah, with Stoop coming off
that
the bench.
Is good.
Yeah, I'm trying to think of some more now. Quite like listing locks, but as soon as I saw that, I went with London Irish, and I was right to go with London Irish because they absolutely hammered Bears.
Well, Bristol started strongly, but it was, and this is kind of one of my things. I often say that red cards don't turn games unless you're a disorganised or poorly put together team. And then they turn games. Then you can capitulate when you get a red card. And that's kind of what happened to Bristol.
Yeah, I think one of Bristol's problems is a perception thing, which is they feel beatable now. No one's afraid of them. A few years ago when they were going to, well, basically when they were winning Europe. Well,
yeah, last year and the year before.
You felt that if you go to Bristol, they might put 50 points on you and you're a bit edgy. And now everyone just thinks, yeah, I'll go there and batter them. It should be fairly straightforward. And it is straightforward. It's really straightforward. You just show up at wherever they're playing and they've got 9 losses. So, yeah, absolutely straightforward. Standard beatdown for the Bears.
Predictable.
To jump to Saracens, who you were saying look ominous, just what do you know about Joe Shaw?
Joe Shaw? Is Joe Shaw... I don't even know what position he plays.
No, he's a coach
isn't he? Yeah, that's how little I know about Joe Shaw.
Yeah, it's the first opportunity I've had to speak with him. I was, aware of him as a player when he played for mainly Newcastle, wasn't it? But Saints, I think he spent a bit of time at.
I honestly don't know.
Sales, anyway, but he was a centre, I think, mainly. Anyway, he was a decent player. But his journey to where he's at now, head coach, and with the absence of Mark McCall while he's recovering from an illness for an unspecified length of time, his rise to this position is remarkable and so rare. Usually the pathway of most coaches is they stay within Premiership rugby club setups.
Yeah.
But Joe Shaw's journey, after finishing as a player, he coached Westow Rugby Club, which is in the northeast, South Shields Westow, who are currently in level 7.
Nice.
Northumberland 1.
Yeah.
And he coached them and led them to, where is it? He led them to 3 league titles, 2 county cups, and reached the final of the Power Gen Intermediate Cup.
Fair play.
Then he went on from there. So he went from Westow in South Shields to be the head coach of Kowloon Rugby Club in Hong Kong.
Wow.
3 years later, he did so well with them, he became Hong Kong's national coach.
What?
And then he's come to Saracens and he headed up their successful A-League and LV Cup teams in 2015 and has been part of the coaching team. And as other people like Sanderson and Borthwick and Gustard have gone on, he's now head coach.
That's incredible.
Wow.
That's an amazing story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I genuinely had no idea.
Neither did I until after. I was quite taken with him when he was chatting. I thought, in the way that we say about various coaches, and I've said about Rob Baxter before, I interviewed him before and after the game, and I thought I'd run through a brick wall for you. And so I looked him up, and I was pretty amazed by his story.
And very Saracens to find him as well. Of all the clubs that are going to find him, it kind of stacks up, it would be Saracens.
100%, yeah.
Yeah, you're right.
I didn't see that little interview, but I didn't see your interview with Tobias Mattsson after the game, who was almost speechless at times and dumbfounded at times. I don't know if that came across from where you were stood, Tim.
There was a moment where, because I'm hearing all sorts of stuff in my earpiece whilst also listening to, you know, what's being said by the person I'm posing the questions to. And there was a point where the feed was cutting in and out, so I was kind of ever so slightly microscopically distracted. And I got paranoid at one point because Tobias Mattsson sort of paused, and I thought, have I just missed the fact that he's finished answering the question? Do I need to ask another one? And then I went, no, this is all happening in mini nanoseconds. I'm going, hold on, have I done something wrong here? Has he finished? Do I need to get? And anyway, I left it another beat, and then he picked it up again. But yeah, I don't know if that is revealing about his thoughts on Quinns in any way. I don't know what you read into that. Do you think he'll be a little bit bereft of ideas?
I think a big bit is just getting personnel back for Quinns. Like, obviously, Danny Kerr and Esther Hazen are incredibly influential, but as it turns out, they're not as influential as Don Brand and Marcus Smith.
All of them combined.
The combination, yeah.
And equally, that their back row, they're without Chisholm, Don Brand, Lorde, Evans.
Kenningham,
and Lavice was on the bench coming back today.
Yeah,
Wilco Lowe was having his first game in 3 months, maybe his first match even of the season. And he only lasted 28 minutes before he got Shepherd's Crook.
That was a bit ominous. I mean, it's not really the best game to ease, because was he originally lined up to be on the bench?
Yeah, Kerrod was on the bench, and he was Kerrod was starting, and he was on the bench, and they flipped it around. The morning of the game,
because someone got injured. There was a press release.
Yeah, one of the second rows went down.
That was the Lucid prop.
Is it L's?
They swapped. Yeah, but they swapped the. I can't remember, but there was something they did with the props as well.
Yeah, so Kerrod was down to start. And Lowe was down as number 18 on the bench, and they swapped Kerrod and Lowe around
because there was an injury to the Lucid prop.
I don't think so. It was just a.
Yeah, I just thought it was tactical. What do you make of this young lad, Jurelicious? Well,
it does say, so this is the Harlequins team change, because I read it and I was like, this doesn't make sense.
Yeah, so, it doesn't make sense. It sounds like it's linked, but it's not. I'm sure.
So
it's not.
Harlequins have made a late change. Reserve prop Jordan Ells drops out of the match day 23, having failed a late fitness test, with Mac Wilson taking his place in the 17 jersey. Wilco Lowe will now start in the 3 jersey, with Simon Kerrod swapping to the bench at 18.
So why? Yeah, they're unrelated.
Now I know it is two unrelated statements, albeit
dressed up as one.
Yeah, it's written as one statement.
Who knows?
Anyway,
what is Jurelicious like? If that's how you say his name.
Young guy, talented, come from London, Scottish, and another example of what you can find in the Championship. And he's got something about him, but he's not. Ben Earl or Billy Vunipola.
Yeah, it's a big ask, isn't it, for Luke Wallace, Archie White and Jurelicious to go against Ben Earl, Vunipola and whoever else they find in their academy.
Yeah, and Wilco Lowe in his first game of the season to go against Vunipola and Vincent Cock.
Yeah.
That's always going to be tough.
Yeah,
Vunipola boys, my, they've got the bit between their teeth.
Yeah.
Tell you what though, Saracens are going to miss Vincent Cock a lot next year.
Who wouldn't? He's one of the best sides in the world.
Isn't he? He's such a good player.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, yeah, I mean, actually, I think Harlequins did well to keep this to 10. To keep this to 19.
To 19.
Was it as ugly a game to watch as it appeared it would. I don't know whether my thoughts were clouded because I was in bitterly cold, horrible wind and rain.
It was a bit ugly, and it looked like the wind... Quinn's had it in the first half, didn't they? And Saracens had it in the second half. It looked like it had an immaterial effect on the game, shall we say.
Yeah, I thought the game was actually relatively high standard. I quite enjoyed it. I thought Saracens squandered a few too many chances, particularly at the start. I mean, goodness me.
They both blew gilt-edged chances at the start, didn't they? Mm.
Dom Morris not giving the ball
given to Maitland. Yeah.
Wasn't it Lozowski? It was Dom Morris.
It was Dom Morris to Maitland on the right-hand side.
Give it to great mates, he'll do the rest.
Exactly. Yeah. Couldn't agree more. Saracens just look ominous, don't they? If Saracens win this league this year, I don't think it's a good advert for the league that they can drop out for a year, lose half their players and still win the thing.
It's an interesting one. So it's always been that question with Saracens, how much of it was the fact that they were paying above the salary cap and how much is the fact that they have got this amazing coaching setup and they do get the best out of their lads.
And it was unlikely that it'd be both, but it might be.
Yeah, I think it is both.
I think it might be both as well.
Well, you say it's unlikely, but winning European Cup multiple times, that does suggest it's both. Because you don't beat
covering up your salary cap infringements for so long must take quite a lot of intellectual property, doesn't it?
But the straw that broke the camel's back for a lot of people were signings that they could have won the European Cup without,
like Elliot
they
Daly.
Elliot Daly was the one.
Elliot Daly.
By all means, steal players from French teams, but don't steal our players. That was kind of like the message. Yeah. That said, isn't there a Harlequins lad moving to Saracens next year?
Tizard, he looks decent.
Tizard, yeah, that's the one.
Good player.
So, yeah, Saracens ominous, very ominous. Who have we got next week? Saturday the 19th. Shall I give you the upcoming matches?
Yes, please.
Was there any game we missed there? Newcastle were on a bye week, were they?
Yes.
Yeah, we touched on Wasps Bath a little bit in the main pod actually, mainly about Ojomo, but. Bath did some nice things.
But then
after the Rukkaduguni red card on 40-odd minutes and then playing most of the last 10 minutes with 13 players because of the de Glanville yellow, which I feel was a bit harsh, that yellow. I think he was actually in a reasonable position to catch that ball. But it doesn't matter because Bath get 0 points out of the game and Wasps get a bonus point win.
So on Friday, when I put my bets on, I just look at the players and I sort of think, who would I have, who I wouldn't have in a combined 15 and sort of make my prediction on that. Bath are the sublime to the ridiculous. A 19-year-old lock, but then they've got the two of the most expensive, probably two most expensive back rows in the country.
Two most expensive number eights in the country, both playing.
This is why people need to be fired. This is not how you spend money. It can't be how you spend money. It's just so stupid. And then I'm like, Ben Spencer, he's class. Bailey, love him. Will Muir, amazing. Max Ojomo. Have I mentioned that I like Max Ojomo?
I think you do quite like him, don't you?
Jonathan Joseph, one of the most talented guys in the country. And then the other two, right? but, you can't win a game with Jack DeToy, Darcy Ray and Valerie Morozov and a 19-year-old second row. You can't do that. So... they've spent the money on these amazing players. It's like they've got a Ferrari to drag their caravan about. It's just so stupid. The whole construction of the Bath squad is so stupid. And yet, that's why it's so important that they just change.
A Ferrari would do a decent job pulling the caravan. It's more you've got a Soviet larder to pull your what's that? What are those amazing silver metallic caravan things, what are they called?
Yeah, the Airstream things.
No.
Airstream.
Okay, you've got a Ferrari to plough your field, right?
There you go.
Pulling a plough.
Yeah.
These things don't make sense.
When did Tom Purdy join Bath?
Oh, what, you mean a mid-season signing? Joining Bath? Weird. Weird, wasn't expecting that. The mid-season signings should be like a huge red light to anyone who supports any team. if you're filling up with loanies, free signings, all these guys, Bath do it more than anyone else.
I can't. I've said it before, I simply can't believe that Bath have any salary cap space available to sign mid-season signings.
You get extra money when there's injuries.
Okay.
They only for one, don't you? Oh, I don't know. I can't keep up. But
right.
Yeah.
It was entirely predictable.
I think Dorsey Ray, mid-season signing. Valerie Morozov, mid-season signing. Tom Parody, mid-season signing. You know.
Nathan Hughes.
Nathan Hughes, of course.
Simpson. Joe Simpson.
He's gone, though, I think.
He played in this game.
Is he still there? Is he on the bench?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah, okay, fine. Yeah, another one.
He got done by Doggers.
Is Di Carpentier not a mid-season signing from Sevens?
He might have been at the start of the season. I think he might have even trained with him last season.
No, he is. I'm sure he is this season.
Did you see Dogger's handoff on Joe Simpson and just sit down?
Yes. I also saw Adromo go round Dogger's. And I saw there's a bit of a foot race between Ben Spencer and Dan Robson. And Ben Spencer burnt Dan Robson. And I know it's a bit harsh on Dan Robson that because he had to turn. But Spencer looked a lot quicker.
I still think it's amazing that Rob Miller plays rugby.
He's still playing rugby.
I mean, he's only 32. For some reason, I think he's much, much older. Premiership X top try scorer. He did that in Stockport. Can you believe it? When they were back in Stockport. It feels like it was years ago. It must be 10 years ago.
Mm. Right, next week's game, JB.
Did Ulster play?
No.
Oh, well, that's a thank God. It's a nice, easy
URC.
Nice, easy section there.
There were a few URC games, but I don't really care if Ulster aren't playing.
And that was your URC update for this.
So here we go. First up, Friday night. Worcester fans rejoice because you'll be getting a win. You're playing Bristol Bears.
Ooh, that'll be an interesting game.
At Worcester.
Televised game, that. On BT Sport. That will be interesting. And do you know what that means? I'm just thinking, 45-minute build-up on a Friday night at Worcester, first live game since Diamond takes over. There will be, I guarantee, I'm guaranteeing without knowing, but I'm almost certain, that there will be a Diamond piece that's been done.
Yes.
An interview at the training ground.
Perfect. Give the people what they want.
Awesome. Yeah.
They all want this. Give it
Wait
to
for Diamond Fireworks.
Diamond Fireworks, love it. I wouldn't mind another piece on Bristol Bears. Maybe tell us about love or culture or brotherhood, something like that. That'd be really cool.
Question, will Worcester have their Lions back? Duane and Sutherland?
Diamonds or Makeham.
Yes, yeah, they absolutely.
They should be available, shouldn't they?
Yeah, they have
Diamond
to play.
Diamonds or Makeham, yeah.
Yeah.
Too right, they'll be there.
Mm. Yeah,
they'll be there.
Give me Worcester then.
Give me Worcester, 100%. Historically,
yeah, I'm going to go for Worcester.
The best game.
No, what am I talking about? I'm going to go for Bears.
Ridiculous. Historically, one of the best matchups in the league: Bath versus Leicester. Polar opposites now.
Yes.
I am going for a record win for Leicester.
Record away win at Bath.
Record away win at the Rack.
100 points.
200.
200-0 to Leicester Tigers.
Tim, do you go behind?
I'll go 199. No, it would be a Leicester win by 10.
At least two scores. Leicester win.
Serious? 20 points at least. This will be a great game. Harlequins Wasps.
Harlequins missing their big boys,
but they can still score tries.
Wasps will still
score tries. So. Yeah, should be good.
40 points all.
Yeah, this has draw written all over, actually.
Where is that? Is that at the Stoop?
At the Stoop,
yeah.
Actually,
at the Stoop is a big deal.
What did you go for?
Give me Quins. Quins need to win this.
If I open up my app on Friday and it says Stoke, Fafita, Launchbury, I'll be picking Wasps.
And Barbary.
Yeah, who scored two tries at the end? Ridiculous. Human.
He just knows where to be.
I'm Quins at home. Just that'll be close though. That'll be tough.
Okay. Irish versus Saracens at Irish.
Ooh, if Irish are going to win against Saracens at any time, this is the time to do it.
Well, they drew last time. So they drew at the Allianz. the Allianz? Is it Allianz? Cap X?
Stonex.
What the hell? Again, it'll depend on their locks. But, you know, the ultimate kryptonite to a well-organised team is London Irish, because you don't really know what they're going to get up to. I like London Irish. I am going to say they are going to beat Saracens.
Give me a 32-all draw.
Yep.
I'm going to go Saracens by 3 points.
Next game, a team that loves the physical versus a team that can't bear it. Sale versus Northampton.
At Franklin's Garden.
I can't think of
it. Give me Sale.
By a lot, I'd expect.
Sale by 9. And that means I've gone for Bristol away, Sale away.
Tigers away.
Saracens away. What was the other game?
Tigers away.
Yeah.
Tigers away.
And last one, Sunday.
Yeah.
Upper Kingston Park. Chiefs.
Falcons against Chiefs.
Exeter away. I'm going for a clean sweep of away wins.
Well, Quinn's Wasps, are you saying, away?
Oh, no. I'm going to change it now. Just yes. Clean sweep of away wins.
Saying
Wasps will sneak it.
You get some good odds on that.
Yeah. Worcester. You were. Leicester. Depends on Quinn's, but provisionally Quinn's. London Irish, Sale, Exeter. Oof, some tasty matchups.
Excellent stuff.
Excellent. Right, Super Bowl time, boys. So, if you like what you've heard, download it again, because we get more downloads and more money. Subscribe, do all those things, and also email us if you want to. If you've got something to say to us, that'd be great. Join Patreon, that's even better. Email address is contact eggchasers@gmail.com, and we will see you next week for some Premiership action. So until then, good night and enjoy the Super Bowl.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free, or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight, and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.